going to hand over to Professor Peter Lambert from Bath University, who's going to be chairing this evening. And welcome to yourself as well.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Kevin. And welcome everybody tonight to what is quite a special event. I've been working on Latin America for nearly 30 years. And it's quite a thing when you share a room with one ambassador to share a room with three ambassadors, all female ambassadors at the same time, is... It's an absolute first for me, and I think it's the first for just about everybody in this room. But it is a tremendous occasion, I think, so thank you. I'd like to introduce, starting at the far end, Rocío Manero is the ambassador to the UK and Northern Ireland from the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. Giselle Morales is the ambassador from the Republic of Nicaragua, and she's been working in England for about 5 years. And I forgot to say about Teresita, sorry. I should have also said she's been here, not only been here 4.5 years, but she's worked nearly 40 years in the diplomatic service. And I think that is enough around this one. And finally, to my left, Teresita Vicente from the Republic of Cuba, who's also been here for 4.5 years, and also 39 years in the diplomatic service of the Republic of Cuba. Now, tonight, the three ambassadors are going to speak for about 10 minutes each, and then there will be time for questions. This is being recorded, so we'll keep quite strictly for the 10 minutes, but then there'll be a chance for absolutely everybody to ask questions if they'd like to. But I'd be grateful if we could ask questions through the chair afterwards. It just makes it easier. So the title of the talk is Trump and the Left in Latin America. And you'll be fully aware that the administration of Donald Trump has talked quite openly about looking for regime change in what he terms the Troika of Tyranny. And looking at the three colleagues we have next to us, I say no more. But I think what's for many people in the room will have followed the Cuban Revolution since 1959, and of course this year marks 60 years since the Cuban Revolution. And many will have been following events in Nicaragua in the 1980s, and of course we're now at 40 years since the 1979 uprising. And many will have followed events since 1999 and the Bolivarian Revolution in Venezuela. And I think what will strike all of us is the familiarity of what is happening under Donald Trump. Even though Donald Trump might be quite different from predecessors, this idea of economic sanctions and blockades, of diplomatic pressure against the countries, of internal destabilization and support for opposition groups, often in the name of civil society, the threat of military intervention, saying things like, well, it's not off the table that there might be military intervention, we keep all options open. And, of course, the use of media and ensuring that media coverage doesn't give a complete view of actually what is happening in those countries. And I think, especially in the events of the last couple of years, we've had a very partial view of what has been happening in the three countries. So tonight is a wonderful opportunity for us to hear from a different perspective, but also to ask any questions. And the three ambassadors have said, please feel free to ask anything in the spirit of open debate and free speech. So I won't speak for any more at all. What I will do, though, is to pass over to Teresita, who will talk about Cuba.
Thank you very much. And allow me, first of all, to thank all of you for being here, for your interest to unite. When we work for years, and we have excellent relations, thank you very much. And to all the campaigners here, Nicaragua, Venezuela, and Cuba campaigners, you are very important support for the revolution in Latin America. And we need that support more than ever. Thank you for that. So the title of the conference is Mr. Trump. His title also here sometimes. And I think what is important to inform now, because you cannot find this information in the big medias, is that we have been experiencing a very severe attack to our independence, to our sovereignty, to our right of self-determination. This is not new, as you said. There were other U.S. administrations trying to throw down the revolutions in Latin America. But the aggressivity, the way he's acting, the out loud speech, way to speech, you know, to say that he will revert all the progressive and processes in Latin America. So thank you very much for that. I brought some documents just to introduce and to prove that this is not a new policy, that we have been dealing with that for since the very inception and triumph of the Cuban Revolution, and even before, because this is a historic referendum. Even in the 18th century, they were discussing, and in the 19th century, discussing in the Congress of the United States how to take over our region and how to be close to our region and to dominate it. This is a document from on the foreign relation of the United States, 1961-1963, and is unclassified now. The date is January 18, 1962. And the name of the document is the Cuba Project. It says, the U.S. objective is to help the Cubans overthrow the communist regime. So what we are looking at here is the same way to put things, no? In the same way. From within Cuba. And please think in terms of what they are doing now against Venezuela, against Nicaragua. Overthrow the communist regime from within Cuba and institute a new government with which the United States can live in peace. Second, concept of operation. Basically, the operation is to bring about the revolt of the Cuban people. The revolt will overthrow the communist regime and institute a new government with which the United States can live in peace. The revolt requires a strongly motivated political action movement established within Cuba to generate the revolt, to give it direction towards the object, and to capitalize on the climatic moment. The political actions will be assisted by economic warfare to induce failure of the communist regime to supply Cuba's economic needs, psychological operations to turn the people's resentment increasingly against the regime, and military-type groups to give the popular movement an action arm for sabotage and armed resistance in support of political objectives. And diplomatic actions, a state is concentrating on the organization of American states, meeting on foreign ministers. You know, they seized Cuba from OAS, hoping to get white Western hemisphere support for OAS resolution condemning Cuba and isolating it from the rest of the hemisphere. So, and the document, there are two documents here. This, it says, the only foreseeable means of alienating internal support is through disenchantment and disaffection based on economic dissatisfaction and hardship. If the above are accepted or cannot be successfully countered, it follows that every possible means should be undertaken promptly to weaken the economic life in Cuba. In social policies if social policies adopted, it should be the result of a positive decision which would call forth a line of action which, while as adroit and inconspicuous as possible, makes the greatest inroads in denying money and supplies to Cuba, to decrease monetary and real wages, to bring about hunger, desperation, and overthrow of government. So, please forgive me, I allocate more of my minutes, some of my minutes to read that. But this explains everything. This also explains the present. So go back to the past and you will explain the present. We are there. We know that socialism is the best system for justice, for a better society, and we will keep there resilient. We will not relinquish our rights to build the society that the Cuban people wants to build. We have been quite active last 3 years in taking measures in our economy and to try to improve the results of our economy. But this is very difficult when you have a policy of blockade. The implementation of the Title 3 of the Health Burton Law means that the United States is imposing to third countries this policy of blockade. So the third countries will not have the right to be sovereignty and to decide to whom they will trade, to whom they will, where they will invest, because fear is at the base of this policy. Threats to be sanctioned. And as a matter of fact, these last years have seen a lot of companies and banks sanctioned because of that. But we have worked hard. We have had elections, a new president, which means continuity. They have said for decades that the young generation in Cuba will not be as revolutionary as the revolution that made possible, as the generation that made possible revolution, and we are there. And our president is a young man working hard in continuity. We have a new, very democratic constitution, very advanced constitution, and we will keep doing so. I want to thank you all again, and I will give floor to my colleagues. Thank you very much.
Can you imagine this happening with Donald Trump and others?
This is how good the Troika of Tirania coordinate each other. Well, thank you very much for getting here today. This year, I want to start saying that this year the UK solidarity with Nicaragua arrives 40 years now, Nicaragua Solidarity Campaign, and the Sandinista Revolution that inspired that international solidarity is also arriving to 40 years. And before of all, I think we need to pay homage to the thousands who showed their tenderness and soul to the people of Nicaragua. For those who gave their life physically or through many years fighting for the liberation in Nicaragua, we have to thank for the friendship, the courage, the determination, and the commitment since its conception with all the campaigns that move UK to look to Nicaragua even before the triumph of the revolution. And you have many posters over there that reminds about that. When, with your solidarity, in the 80s, you made possible the revolution to survive at some point. Your solidarity gave us hope during the 17 years of neoliberalism. With your solidarity in the last 12 years of the Sandinista revolution has continued, and its achievement on reduction of poverty, of inequality, on closing the gender gap, on education and health, the strengthening of the social movement, the cooperative movement, the trade union movement, the social economy, the development of infrastructure, the fight against climate change, the resilience for adaptation, all is also because of you. Your friendship has made Nicaraguan revolution now stronger. Nicaragua, along with Cuba, you have heard Teresita, and now in Venezuela, are the clearest example of rampant imperialism. In a pattern that is repeating itself, even before, in the case of Nicaragua, since the U.S. mercenary William Walker invaded for the first time and declared himself president of Nicaragua in 1856. And we see through history, then in 27, and then the mercenary warfare of the 80s, and then we have the pressures using OAS, for example, to pressure the United States in the 80s now. And the threat, the same that Nicaragua, the same as Cuba and Venezuela, are a threat to the security of the United States. So there is a continuous trajectory of intervention that shows and sometimes it shows in different forms. Sometimes it's as a military direct intervention has been like a push form, forms of political and more subtle tactics, using others to get to do their deeds. So when the Nicaraguan Revolution triumphed in 1979 and overthrew the Somoza dictatorship, after 15,000 people died, Harold Pinter, after the revolution handover, lost elections in 1990, Harold Pinter in 2005 Nobel Prize speech entitled "Art, Truth, and Politics" explained all in the way a person like him can do. As a spokesperson for Nicaragua in opposing congressional aid to the Contras in the 1980s, he said, "The United States supported the brutal Somoza dictatorship in Nicaragua for over 40 years. The Nicaraguan people led by Sandinista overthrew this regime in 79, a breathtaking popular revolution. The Sandinista weren't perfect. They possessed their fair share of arrogance, and their political philosophy contained a number of contradictory elements, but they were intelligent, rational, and civilized. They set out to establish a stable, decent, pluralist society. The death penalty was abolished. Hundreds of thousands of poverty-stricken peasants were brought back from the dead. Over 100,000 families were given title to land. 2,000 schools were built. A quite remarkable literacy campaign reduced the illiteracy in the country to less than 1/7. Free education was established and free health service. Infant mortality was reduced by 1/3. polio was eradicated. The United States denounced this achievement as Marxist-Leninist subversion. In the view of the U.S. government, the dangerous example was being set. If Nicaragua was allowed to establish basic norms of social and economic justice, if it was allowed to raise the standard of healthcare, education, and achieve social unity and national self-respect, neighboring countries will ask the same questions and do the same things. The United States finally brought down the Sandinista government. It took some years and considerable resistance, but relentless economic persecution and 30,000 people dead finally undermined the revolution. They were exhausted and poverty-stricken once again. The casinos moved back to the country. Free health and free education were over. Big business returned with vengeance. Democracy has prevailed. So it says it all, I think, you know, because this is what is happening all over again. This part of the in these years, in this second part of the revolution since 2007, we have reduced poverty again by half. We have reduced inequality. We becoming the fifth most gender equal country in the world. Also, we're changing, doing things in the energy sector, so we want to change the energy matrix, so that is a big revolution itself. And we are the second fastest, we were until 2018, the second fastest growing economy in the region. And that's an example for some from a very small country. So having the best indicator in human security in Central America and the Caribbean, free health again, reinstated, free education again reinstated, the reduction of illiteracy again done it for the second time. And in despite the difficulties of last year that many of you are aware, we advanced enough for the World Economic Forum put Nicaragua in the index of inclusive development. So in 2017, we were in the 29th position, in 32 position out of 74 countries. In 2018, despite of the big attack that we were in, the country moved to the 29th. And this is very important because it's inclusiveness. We're talking about inclusiveness. So someone said all this very virtually every social experiment of any significance in the 20th century has been either overthrown, invaded, or bombed, corrupted, perverted, or subverted, sanctioned, embargoed, or destabilized, or otherwise had life made impossible for it by the United States. None of these socialist government or movements, from the Russian Revolution to Fidel Castro in Cuba, from Communist China to the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, not one, and to Venezuela of Chavez, no one was permitted to rise or fall solely on his own merits. No one was left secure enough to drop its guard against the all-powerful enemy abroad and freely and fully relax and control and do the good for their home. So I think that is this is what is going on. So, okay. So we're going to go just pass all this and say two important things. One is that we are not alone. This is a big fight, but we are three together. That is true. That is the Troika exists, but not for tyranny. It's for liberation. And for inclusiveness and for development and for the good of our people. But we are not alone. We have you, and that is important. And we have in the region, for example, we have some the left also is there for us. For example, the party of the European left has backed these countries or has condemned the attacks. And we're talking about 40 political entities just there alone. And then the Sao Paulo Forum, which has two of the biggest parties in there, the Brazilian Workers' Party and the Morena and the Workers' Parties in Mexico. So we're talking about millions of people there, also have been very vocal condemning the attacks on the countries. So we need to continue the revolution. We are committed. The Nicaraguan revolution will continue. We will, in Trump war against Latin America progressive movements and governments, who will be the resistance? So we need to be together. So the international solidarity with our countries need to be together so we can confront that attack. Probably we need to do a lot of something like the pacifist movement in the U.S. against the war of Vietnam. I think that must be required. And also to remember that you did it when Central America was also being attacked by the United States when the Nicaraguan Revolution was attacked. So the Sandinista Revolution is on the tear. We will continue moving forward. The Sandinista Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, the Bolivarian Revolution remains strong. We are the Son Sandino, Martí, and Bolívar, proud of these revolutionary projects that put in the center and in the heart of all the dignity, the national pride, the national sovereignty, the social justice. With your friendship and your solidarity, Nicaragua, Cuba, and Venezuela will continue to be free. We'll continue resisting. We will prevail. Thank you.
Okay. I'm the last one, the youngest in revolution. Teresita is 60 years in revolution. Giselle, 40. And we, Venezuelans, 20. Thank you. Thank you for being here with us, for giving us the opportunity to talk to you, to tell you things that you won't see in the media, to answer your questions, and most of all, thank you very much to Unite the Union. Thank you because you give us the opportunity to talk to people, and people, the opinion of all of you is so important. It's so important. We have nothing to defend ourselves but you. Nothing else. We are fighting with nothing. With the right, with the law, with international law in our hands, against you know what. And the way to do something is through your minds, is through your head, your words, this thing that we do by WhatsApp, whatever, here. That is what the only thing that we have to fight against the great media. I was thinking, okay, what can I do? What can I say? Do I have to tell them the achievements of the Venezuelan Revolution, because the media never talks about that. And it could be good to talk about that. But at this moment, we are in real danger. We are on the siege. And what we have to do here is to call for your help and explain to you what is it about the blockade. Teresita told you what was the strategy of the United States back in 1960. It's the same strategy at this moment. This conference talks about Latin America under Trump, but it is not Trump. It is the way things are in United States. They think that America is for the Americans. And if you don't respect their law, their way of doing things, their democracy, they have to break you down. That's what they have done for many, many years, and they continue doing so. Teresita read something. In 1962, I will read you a little thing about the former ambassador of the United States to my country. And he said that about 2 months ago, talking about the blockade. And you will find that it is the same thing, the same thing. Let me see if I find it here. Okay. At this moment, perhaps the best solution would be to accelerate the collapse. He's talking about Venezuela. Even if it produces great suffering for a period of months or perhaps years. They don't matter. Mr. William Bromfield, former ambassador of the United States to my country. He was ambassador about 2 or 3 years ago. And he said that about 20 days ago in Mount Zion. So, Venezuela is under siege. And I have prepared for you a resume. A resume that you have. I see some of them. Can you pass me this, please? It's a work that we have done. From 2015, these are facts, only facts. This is not me talking or whatever. It's facts. And it goes from 2015, when Mr. Obama declared Venezuela a real and present danger for the United States and for humanity, to June 2019. There are all the measures, all the sanctions that they have imposed in Venezuela. At this moment, we have no access to the financial system. We cannot negotiate in dollars. Sometimes we can't do it also in euros. They are blockading the imports of medicines. They are paralyzing our oil industry. They are freezing our assets. It's incredible what they are doing to Venezuela. Why are they doing this? Why? Well, because back in 1902, President Monroe said that America is for Americans. And that you have a back chart. Everybody wants a back chart at this moment. China has his back chart. Everybody has a back chart. But this back chart happened to say, listen, let us change things back in the 80s. It's developed in the 90s and in the first decade of the 21st century, you have there Cuba, that was the leader, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Ecuador, and all Latin American turmoil. They have to do something. It is not Trump. It's just Trump is, you know, like an elephant in a He's a very heavy person, no? In his way. Yes. But it's the same thing. Obama is more another kind of person. That's it. It's the image, but it's the same thing. They need the backyard. They need our resources. They need to break the way we started to function. We started to put in place a very rare kind of cooperation, a cooperation among us in health. We went out and say, Cuba went out and say, okay, how many blinds there are in Panama? Let me do the mission miracle and give them their eyes. That's not good. That is not good. And Venezuela say, okay, let us do financial cooperation. Let us go to the Antillas. Let us go to the Caribbean. Let us go to our friends and give them money. For what? Well, to cooperate, for invest, for producing. And we started to create another model, a model among friends of equality. Nothing that has to do with the subordination that they are used to. At least in the relations between United States and Latin America, that has been the case for years and years and years. So they have to break Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, because that's the only way to control everything. If Venezuela goes down at this moment, everything is going down. We are not going to permit that. We are not going to allow that. And we need you. We need you. Why? Because, you know, a word is more important than 1,000 rifles. The word is very important. And if you continue, if you read and communicate among all of you, there is a constituency, I don't know if that's the name or whatever, in London, that about a week ago, they came out and say to their MPs, why you don't talk in the parliament and ask the government about what is really happening in Venezuela, in Nicaragua? Why don't you do that? I contacted them. I'm going to have a meeting with them on Monday. They are asking their MPs. So that's what we need. We need to do not take what I tell you as a truth. Just read, listen. Even with this blockade, we are giving 75% of the money we have to our social programs. We are working hard in Nicaragua and Cuba, and we will prevail because they are not going to take us down. With the opinion and the goodwill of all of you here and in Europe and in everywhere. I'm sure of that. And thank you. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much to Teresita, Giselle, and to Rocio. As promised, please do feel free to ask any of them any questions that you have. And you have your hand up very quickly at the back.
I wonder if, here is an ambassadorial group, we're able to lobby anyone prior to Trump's visit to the UK. And when if there was any discussion about Latin America when he was ever here, because I know Prince Charles has been in Cuba this year, and that was apparently some official commercial trade mission, something or other. And I wondered, you know, if you'd had the opportunity to lobby, and if there was any response from the British government in relation to Trump's visit.
Thank you.
It is.
Well, I don't think.
Do you want to pass that microphone?
That's good.
I was not at the meetings, but I don't think the subject could be of interest in the visit of Mr. Trump. There are so many worldwide subjects, no? I haven't heard about this subject of Latin America or Cuba, Venezuela being submitted in those meetings. But of course we do lobby, not because the visit of Mr. Trump, but we do lobby in Parliament. This is part of our job now,
yes,
to keep the subject alive and to raise the subject anytime we can do it. And we need to do it because, as we said, there is no single big media that will inform or let us know, tell the truth about the situation and the U.S. policy in front of Latin America. But of course, we do lobby. It's part of our job.
Thank you.
I've got two questions. One, Teresita Morcia. Sorry. Not going to get you wrong. I'd like to try in Spanish because I learned in Spanish, so that's all right.
Could you repeat it afterwards in English as well?
Yeah, that's fine.
Good in Spanish.
Rocío, estoy aquí en la vergüenza a la UCA gobierno's decisión apoya Estados Unidos y Juan Guaido no hablan por todos. Nosotros. Yo apoyo pueblo venezolano, el gobierno y Nicolás Maduro. No está solo. ¿Cómo están los venezolanos? No confío en los medios. I don't know if I said that right. At least they're saying that you're not on your own. We're all with you. You know, I'm ashamed at UK's decision to follow the US. We support you, we stand by you 100%. And again, just basically with the leaflet, we don't believe the media, and it's getting the information from yourself, the true information rather than the media.
Okay, you're asking me, thank you. Thank you so much. How are the Venezuelans, the people of Venezuela now? Well, you know, I don't know what to say. Because it's not only the people of Venezuela. We are going through a road where Cuba was going 60 years ago. And Nicaragua also. I don't know what kind of material our people are made. I don't know. They are, I'm telling you, like heroes. I don't know. In my country, sometimes they have 15 days, a month, without electricity because they blow the electricity. Without medicine because they don't, listen, there is a product, I don't remember the name, that you need for people who has this chronic sickness in the blood. We have tried three times to pay the containers, for them to send the containers, and they don't let us pay. They don't let us pay. They have them. We have the money, but we cannot do it. So the only thing I know is that the people has now more political conscience than before. And they are fighting. They are getting together. And I know they are neighborhoods, that they take all the food and they prepare food for all of them. For all of them. And I'm talking about professors of the university, doctors, public service. I'm not talking about people who has no means. It's just that you cannot buy anything. You see? Because the blockade is something so severe. It's a crime. It's a crime. What they are doing is a crime. But we are resisting. We are resisting. We will.
So could we come back to you later? Because there are lots of questions around the room, but if we've run out, we'll come down. Come back to you. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for letting us know what is really happening, because obviously the news here are different. So thank you very much for your presence today. I'm from Mexico, by the way, but my question is that I think Isel said about the cooperation among the three of you, but what about the cooperation with the rest of Latin America? I mean, Latin America is not only Cuba and Venezuela and Nicaragua, it's Chile, Mexico, Honduras, Peru, Colombia. So what are those countries doing to support what's going on? And it's not only what is going on in your countries. My country is having the battle also. But are you thinking about any alliance in between all of the Latin American countries to help each other economically or with food or with doctors or means that you need? What about setting up the own currency to trade between us?
That's what you gotta see.
We are not thinking. We are doing it. We have done it since, I don't know, since 60 years ago. We have done it. We started to create Petrocaribe. Petrocaribe is for everyone. Everyone. We have made special cooperative or cooperation models to talk among the whole Latin America, CELAC, without the United States. Without the United States. And then only CELAC, only us. We have created ALBA. You have here ALBA. Tell Teresita, she can tell you, and Giselle. Giselle is cooperation in agriculture. Teresa is cooperation in health and in education. In education, because they are champions in that. We are cooperation in what we have more, what we have most. Oil, financing. Well, now we have nothing, no? But we used to.
But I think it's important, Rocio, that CELAC is because it's still there, is a regional to counterbalance the presence of U.S. Yes. and the heavy presence of Canada and U.S. in the Organization of American States. So that changed the dynamic. So CELAC is about that. Unfortunately, you have to see, you know, the people of those countries of Latin America are showing its solidarity. You see parties of the left in Latin America showing its support to Cuba, showing its support to. But the difference is now from some years ago, some right wing governments have got in place, have got access to the governments in some countries. Some of what you mentioned. I don't want to say all of them, but you mentioned it. So it's difficult for and at the contrary, they have taken the stance of the United States. They are following that. So for that, it's difficult to find a way of cooperation. But despite of that, the good thing is about the social movement. So it's the social movement that is still connected, that keep connected. And it's good to mention also that ALBA is not these three countries, it's the Caribbean countries.
It's the Caribbean.
We're talking about with Petrocaribe, ALBA and Petrocaribe, we're talking about more than 20 countries working together and you know, benefit of this model. So that is something that can, that model of cooperation, of how we relate each other, is the thing that cannot be permitted. Because we have demonstrated that we can live without you. We have said them.
You cannot shine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And we now we have Mexico. We have a new government in Mexico that has been also supportive to all, has expressed its stance against intervention. And is pro the countries of Latin America to be owned by their people.
Thank you.
My name is Amy Parsi, and as you know, Jeremy Corbyn was always a great supporter of all your countries and the revolutions in those countries. And one thing the Labour Party's got its problems at the moment, I'm in Bristol North West CLP. We've got an MP who's kind of on the right of the party, so he doesn't really support Jeremy Corbyn. But we did have a motion about Venezuela, about that we should oppose recognising Guaido as the interim president and things like that. And it was actually passed unanimously, apart from one person, which is pretty incredible with a right-wing MP, you know. But anyway, so I hope that one thing that people will do is engage with the Labour Party, get these motions passed in the Labour Party, and when it comes to the election, get out on the streets and door knock for your life, because if we get the kind of government that will be there with Jeremy Corbyn, everything will be completely different for your country, I'm sure, at least from a UK perspective. I don't know what you think about.
I should say we have always had a great deal of support, and the importance of the trade union movement also is there. There are a lot of changes. Those workers and leaders visiting the region are also a very important source of information. Those exchanges of delegations of Nicaraguans, Venezuelans, Cubans coming here, those leaders, trade unionists visiting our region are a very, very trustable source of information. So if as long as we keep that, I think we will have a lot of cooperation also in that regard. Thank you for that.
Soy Alice, soy de Cuba. Aquí está mi esposa, va a estar lucida para la nueva
edad. So this is Alice from Cuba, and what he said is I'll translate because it's English.
It's English.
Estamos interesados en saber qué tendencia se ha visto en el gobierno de Luca.
What trends have been noted, if any,
después,
with the UK government?
después de la visita de Trump, sí, queremos saber si se ha visto alguna tendencia de recrudecer hacia los latinos esta situación que ya es difícil, lo que el gobierno llama política hostil contra la inmigración, que ya se hace un poco difícil aquí. Los latinos o los no europeos tenemos mucha dificultad cuando vivimos aquí para renovar
So the question is about whether the ambassadors have noticed any tightening up of the Home Office rules in terms of the immigration and the hostile environment for Latinos, at reflecting Trump's views and approach to Latin American countries, because obviously the hostile environment and the immigration policies affect any non-Europeans, not obviously just people from Latin America, but non-Europeans. And it was just a question about whether you've perceived any tightening of or any further restrictions by the UK Home Office in terms of permits for people from your country.
Thank you.
Well, Aristides, tú eres cubano. I know Aristides very well. Thanks for your contribution. But I think the question is, being the ambassador here, have you experienced a change? Because it's interesting to know from your perspective if you have experienced some effects from that. As far as we are concerned, in the embassy, we haven't had any indication until now of a different kind of approach to the subject of immigration.
The same here. No, the same here.
Sí, mira, no. Que es interesante saber si tú has experimentado que hay un cambio o algo. Tus impresiones son importantes siendo un cubano, ¿no? Para nosotros. Nosotros no hemos percibido desde la visita, como tú preguntaste, ningún cambio. No nos ha sido informado por los cubanos ningún cambio a partir de esta visita, ¿no? Ningún cambio en la perspectiva migratoria. No hemos podido advertir una diferencia en esto. Pero es importante también tu información y tu perspectiva, ¿no? Sobre eso.
So we, of course, we've got no way of knowing that this is anything to do with the tightening or any sort of tightening after you know, as a response to Trump's feelings. But we invited a young student to come and take part this summer. It would be invited yesterday on one of the summer calls, which I teach on. I've been teaching on them for years, and we've invited him. The school had arranged its residential course. The school had given him a 50% scholarship and a third week free. And we applied for the visa. And we submitted all the papers. And the deposit was paid for his course. And they rejected his application. It was for a 3-week visit. It was a short, it was classed as a short term student visa, so it was only for 3 months. And they wrote back saying it was a potential immigrant, 17 years old. They claimed that he didn't have, they didn't receive letters of support from his parents for his visit. That was a lie, that both his parents had submitted letters of support, but the Home Office will do things like that. They'll claim whatever. And and they also said that there was no proof that it was going to return to Cuba. But then the only proof you could give is a return ticket, which you're not going to buy until you got the visa.
And you link that to the Trump, Mr. Trump's visit, or it's happening because...
I don't know. It's happened in the last month. And I don't know. I mean, it's never been particularly easy for many people to get visas to this country anyway. But it was just a question about whether you perceive there's been any tightening of restrictions for visit visas for people...
Not in the case of Cuba. We have always visas or rejected, but not a change in the policy after the visit, no? Or because of the visit.
Well, not something else. But Trump's policies and the timing of the sanctions have changed since then.
Thanks for the information. I think I should think about that because up to now, I haven't think about it in those terms.
Thank you. The next question was here.
I was struck by remarks made by more than one ambassador pointing out that the problem didn't start with Donald Trump. It was a tendency because of Donald Trump is such a reactionary and obnoxious personality, tends to grant leaders into forgetting that what he represents, the same thing that Obama represented and every other president, which is US imperialism. And if we take our eye off that, we miss out something very useful, very strengthened, because we need to understand, I think, that US imperialism now is acting in the way it is, not because it is confident and feeling its historical position strong, but rather because it's facing a very deep crisis of its own system. Global production crisis, which is global in scale, which is driving wars. So, when we hear calls for resistance, we can respond in an emotional way. It's right to do so. I'm sure that everyone is sincere when they say, you know, to support. In the end, we need to have some understanding that the objective reality favors resistance. In the end, resistance will and the imperialist resistance will prevail. Because it's imperialism is a dying system. It's a system that's going through its death throes. And it's our responsibility.
Would any of you like to agree?
There is someone there who wants to say.
Sorry.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, the Co-op Bank withdrew banking facilities from the Cuba Solidarity Campaign on the basis that it wasn't the Cuba Solidarity Campaign. Earlier this year, in the Bank of England confiscated $1.4 billion worth of assets that presumably are stored somewhere in the Bank of England vaults. Many of the banks in Britain refused to carry out any financial transactions with Venezuela, with Cuba, maybe even with Nicaragua. Earlier this year, the British government recognised the presidential usurper in Venezuela. Just a few days ago, the British Navy hijacked an Iranian oil tanker in the Mediterranean. So the British government is becoming a very active supporter of the Trump regime in the United States. What is it that we in Britain should be doing to have to get back control of our own financial banks in terms of so that we can actually trade with who we actually like? And what can we do in support of the, especially Venezuela, in terms of getting back the $1.4 billion that's been confiscated?
What should you do? There is only one recipe, only one. What has to be done? It is you who have to do it. Organize, be creative, be united, be clear in what you want, and fight. Fight with ideas. And you will see. One thing is certain. The big powers of the world, they cannot work or do things as easy as they did it before. And it is because we are here. Because we are not illiterate. Because we now know. That's the only thing I'm telling you. I talk to you, and the only thing I want from you is just to support us. To support us. And you, among you, you have excellent unions. That's good. There are countries that don't have unions, good unions, you know. You have excellent unions. You have excellent universities, colleges. You have, whatever happens, it must come from you. And you will see.
Your Excellencies, my name is Adrian Grabarski, and I'm one of the trade union organizers for the Shop Workers Union, Oslo, and I'm here at the invite of my sister union, Unite. And what we're now, well, in the United Kingdom, we do show a lot of solidarity to each other, the working people, where that's our brothers and sisters, living their jobs in Honda factory in Swindon, where that's our colleagues losing their jobs in Tesco in Cardiff, and so on and so forth. I think this solidarity is something we extend across the globe, and as trade unions, you seconded it. We're very interested in the struggles of the working people, whether that's in Latin America, whether that's in the Middle East, but we strongly believe in solidarity. I think me as an organizer, me as a person who organizes in a trade union and working people, I think what will help me is to have a positive narrative, a positive agenda, positive news coming out of your country. So I know, for me to read about Nicaragua and building a canal, which will be taking the control away from the USA in Panama, I need to read it in Russian. I don't read it in English. I find it nowhere in English. For me to find out about you having the best education system in the world, or at least in Western Hemisphere, and you sending thousands and tens of thousands of doctors under your aid programs into Venezuela, I need to read it in Russian again. We need to find out about you discovering new airfields, oil fields, apologies, not airfields, oil fields, and for you to kind of, showing no support to the COP, the attack which you had there, I need to read it in Russian again. So my ask to yourself is very simple. Just give us this information. I'm grateful for you to be here. You're very welcome. And we will continuously support you. But just give us this information so we can spread it, so we can continue to show our solidarity with you, brothers and sisters.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Ed, what you say is true, because the media doesn't reproduce things that are important in our country, that are good developments of our country. We, of the three, Just, you know, we can also get, you know, if we get your mail, we can share with you all the information that we have. But also, the three of the country has campaigns, the Venezuela campaign, the Cuba campaign, and they have websites, and they also produce every very regularly. They are talking about the issues, and they give a lot of information about the happenings in the countries, and also they summarize, you know, things that are the topics. For example, there was one of the topic was the canal, and in the moment when the canal was going on in the media, they are also trying to pick up and serve as a counteracting the media campaign, co-propaganda. So I will ask you also, you know, to go to the websites. But if you give us your email. We make sure that to reach out to you.
Websites.
Nicaragua Solidarity Campaign, Cuba Solidarity Campaign, and Venezuela Solidarity Campaign. And they have in their website, they have these briefings about the countries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank
you.
But give us an email.
Question there.
A few people have raised this evening this question about what can we do, and our ambassador comrades have talked about the need for our solidarity. And one of the things that comes again and again, because right now Britain really is at war with your countries, but it's an undeclared war. We haven't sent our soldiers. We can't campaign to bring our soldiers back. But the war is being fought, nevertheless, with economic weapons, and in particular with the media. And I would like to suggest something, because there's a lot of people here who are in trade unions, and it's my view that workers can do more than just talk to each other. Workers are the ones who do everything the bourgeoisie orders. Without our work, their orders mean nothing. And we have to be prepared to use our organised strength to defy the orders. That's what unions should be for. To put the power of the working class in action, you have to be organised and united. We are here in the building of Unite the Union, which is a massive nationwide union. Unite the Union should have a policy that it takes to the TUC. The TUC should adopt a policy that applies to all the unions in Britain of no cooperation with these wars. That means media workers, not just the journalists, who are paid very well to write their lies, but the print workers, the people who distribute, take the papers in the lorries, who roll the cameras on the journalists who are speaking their lies. These people need to be empowered to refuse to cooperate with these lies, because these lies are responsible for covering up genocides. These are not harmless little lies. These people are being paid to conduct illegal, aggressive wars against humanity, and it is a worker's job to see that and use their power.
Good.
Did you have a question, and then to the...
I just wondered if anybody had a view on Chinese imperialism. We've heard a lot about the United States imperialism, and they seem to be doing the same thing
Chinese imperialism.
Yes, they are emperors. This is a 5,000 years civilization alive. I don't know how I'm saying that, but it's like that. Okay. Well, if that is an imperialism, it's one that is based on work and knowledge, and is trying to reach out to the world through a cooperation that they call win-win, in which they cooperate with the country looking for their interests, but fulfilling also the interests of the other one. It's a different kind of relation, completely different to the one that a power like United States used to. And that is the key of their success. Knowledge, they are sons of Confucius. They know that to reach what they know, what they say, this equilibrium, universe equilibrium, they have to study and to know and to know and to know, because it's the only way to, you know, to reach the universe. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're doing. They are working and studying, working and studying. And they say, we are half of the world. And we, that's it. We don't want to harm anyone. But we want to cooperate like this, not like this.
Thank you. Well, I should say that when we are denied with finance and credits, we obtain them in China. So a great deal of development of cooperation in Cuba is made with China.
Yes.
And they have been very generous, I should say, like comrades in doing that. And there are a lot of projects, Chinese projects in Cuba. As far as I know, they have never request cession of sovereignty or dignity when in relation with us.
The same with Venezuela. The same.
No, I think they're talking about the Latin American context. Yeah. It might be different. Good. Thank you for the question. I think we've got time for one last question. And the gentleman over there had his hand up earlier, I think.
Yes, Gwala has talked about the impact of the media in this country, the way it distorts, etc., etc. And I share that view. I share a frustration, however. Maybe I'm prejudiced and I apologise for that in advance. But there is a daily newspaper that comes out in this country, owned by its readers. Corbyn describes it as the most precious voice we have in the media. It's called the Morning Star. It routinely reports the truth from all of those three countries.
Yes.
So please read it.
Good. Thank
you. Share out today because it's owned by us.
Good. Thank you very much. Now, before we say our thank yous, two things. First of all, I've been asked to remind you, in terms of solidarity, that raffle tickets are for sale at the table at the just by the exit. But also, for some of you might know, but today is Independence Day in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. And Rocío has decided to spend it in Bristol, which is very good of her. But you wanted to do a toast.
Yeah. A toast. Yeah. Yes. It does, but we don't know. We don't have anything to toast. We have to be
wicked. What we could do is we toast.
We have rum. We have rum. We can go outside.
No, outside.
A good Cuban and Venezuelan and Nicaraguan rum.
So before we go outside, first of all, say thank you once again to the generosity of Unite for letting us use the building and supporting us tonight. I'd like to also say thank you to Blink, Cuba Solidarity, Venezuela Solidarity as well. Thank you everybody for coming, but thank you most of all to three ambassadors who have given up their evening to come down to Bristol and to talk to us. Thank you very much.
We
actually have a request from Rocío because it's...
No, it's mine.
Oh, it's yours.
No, it's mine.
A request from Giselle.
For
for the national anthem of Venezuela to be played.
If you want to,
I have no idea.
To be with us,
yeah, this one is, I think, this one. This one is the one who.
Yeah,
because there is no national anthem without anthem.
It's a very beautiful, very short and beautiful. Very beautiful.
Okay, wait. Okay, perfect. What?
Gloria al bravo pueblo que tuvo la ansiedad.